Last time on the Electric Information Show.
What was the deal with that octopus?
That's incredibly racist, kinda.
Why is the sumo covered in crane fraise?
It's a towaway zone. We can't keep the hippo here.
Just what I thought. You've got an extremely bad case of Tinder Tush.
Oh my.
Back all. It's the Electric Information Show. We're here again, and quite frankly, I've run out of interesting things to say in our opening.
Oh, don't be that way.
I'll be that way all goddamn day I please, thank you very much. In fact, I'm declaring it being that day way. Wait, that was
being
wrong.
Being that day way.
Shut
awesome.
Up.
Awesome.
I worked
awesome.
All day.
Awesome. Awesome.
This is a slow clap free zone, mister.
Well, that still works.
There will be only head banging on desk. Have fun.
It hurts.
You know what else hurts? Our sponsor. Tell us what it is, Toya.
We are sponsored this week by Color Dreams. We used to make games for the NES about religion, and now we don't exist anymore. Color Dreams. Because the rapture happened.
Yeah, at least for them.
Well, somebody has to go make the games in heaven. Unfortunately, they're all going to be NES games that were very bad, and oh my god, it's Al!
So wait, then all you have to do to avoid the apocalypse is just not believe in it then? And nothing bad will happen?
You have to not believe that the NES ever existed.
It's kind of like not believing in the Holocaust, only more offensive.
I see what you did there. So but, Joe, shouldn't you get around to doing some introductions at some point?
I really should, but it's a union break.
God damn it.
Hey, I don't make the rules. I just think them up and write them down.
Since when is there a podcasters union?
Since 5 minutes ago. You missed the memo.
God damn it.
See, this is what happens when you don't pay attention. But fine, I'll just have to put in a form to the union telling them why I went off break early. Anywho, I'm Joe Convoy. Along with me is my co-host, Toya, and our guest this week...
Yeah, go ahead.
That's what you get for interrupting my introductions. I'll get you yet, you son of a... Anyways, we are joined here by our first ever two-week-in-a-row guest. Welcome back to the show, Aaron of the Lost World. Aaron, that would be your cue to say hello. I gave you your own nickname.
That's true. I totally had my microphone muted. I said something really funny, and that makes me sad.
Liar!
You know what makes me sad? Your face.
You know what makes me sad is your horrible Roy Scheider impression that you just did there. I'll get you, like he's fucking Jaws.
Aaron, just because it's your second week back doesn't mean I have to put your name on the doors quite yet, okay? Just calm down there, buddy.
Okay.
Just saying.
You're saying.
You mad?
Hey, glad.
And of course, we are also joined here by our good buddy, Dave. Dave, do you have any, names you prefer to be called? Any nicknames? Online handles, as they call them in this fancy day of computers?
I usually go by You Are Reading. Also, Quilla321.
I'll call you anything but Big Daddy.
I'll have to take your word for that. You hear me?
I don't want
you
no trouble.
You promise me you will not refer to me as that. Just
promise
you specifically.
Okay there, Big Daddy. Hey, he said he would, and I didn't say anything about me.
And I did refer to him specifically.
Exactly. Loopholes, ladies and gentlemen. They're what they what.
Now I feel discriminated against.
Well, you know what? Maybe you should move to America. Then you can take a part of Loopholes. God damn it. Why the hell isn't Loopholes our sponsor?
Loopholes is in the idea, or Loopholes the disease?
The representative for Loopholes actually called. He said that he's busy with the Wall Street and the Senate right now.
Nah, likely story. So, Toya, do we have anything, you know, going on in the world these days? I think you mentioned something about some new Street Fighter Cross Tekken news.
Well, in the world of what's going on with Street Fighter Cross Tekken, Yoshinori Ono took to Twitter today and started announcing a couple of things. He said that we should be getting, well, he coyly said that we should be getting a new teaser just short of E3. Didn't say what it would include, but one is to think that it would include reveals for all the characters he's been teasing so far. That being those horrible teasers of Kami, Lei Wulong, and Sagat, all which have this kind of, you know, guess which character this is, and then they clearly show you, like, trademarks of the character, and it's like, yeah, thanks a lot. So yeah, we may get a trailer with that, and we were also confirmed this week that the Tekken characters will have 6-button inputs, so yay! I've always wanted that.
Aw, little Tekken's finally growing up. It's got its 5th and 6th buttons. Now, if only Mortal Kombat can grow into something robust and entertaining.
Baby steps. Mortal Kombat still has to get past having a block button first.
You think he'll be able to air juggle Chun-Li? Because that would be so satisfying.
You have been able to air juggle since Street Fighter 4, really.
I'll air juggle Chun-Li.
You can air juggle
if you know what I mean. And by that, I mean actually juggle her in the air with a giant Arabian man. Oh, sorry, Turkish.
Well, Hakan, there you go.
And I say, Hakan seems like the human juggling kind of a person, you know?
Ooh, by the way, Arcade Edition stats were released today with battle points tallied for, all the characters online so far. Hakan is bottom of the barrel, no pun intended.
Bottom of the oil barrel.
You went there, I didn't.
Pun intended!
And, strange enough, Ryu has dropped from the number one spot down to number 12.
Oh, interesting. Who is who's the new number one?
It would be Yun, and most people are speculating that's because Daigo the Beast Uehara has recently started playing Yun, and everybody's scrambling to copy him.
Street Fighter's come a long way since its pen and paper game. But spoiler alert, it was terrible.
There actually was. I don't know if you meant that as a joke or not, but there actually was a pen and paper Street Fighter game, and it was terrible.
Oh, I know. I meant that as both a joke and a real thing.
Oh, yeah. The card game, the versus card game wasn't so bad, though. I have some of the cards for that. It wasn't that bad.
Yeah, the card game, I've heard good things about the card game, but I never played it.
The better card game is actually the first one. There's a game called SNK versus Capcom Card Fighters Clash on the Nintendo DS. That is phenomenally fun. Because it's actually precluded on a knowledge of the game. So, like, for instance, you can team up certain characters by placing their cards on each other, and that will actually amplify their attacks. So you've got your basic stuff, like teaming up Ken and Ryu, but then you've got, like, more obscure team-ups, like, you know, you got, like, Rolento and Sodom, or, I don't know, what's another obscure one?
I still don't like to call Rolento and Sodom an obscure team, but that's just because I practically worship Final Fight, so.
Oh, right, but I'm talking in terms of Street Fighter context. Not a lot of Street Fighter fans actually put two and two together in that regard.
And really, that should be illegal, because Final Fight is just awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, as long as it's not the Final Fight episode of the Street Fighter animated series.
I was kind of disappointed to see not a lot of Final Fight characters make it into Namco versus Capcom, the tactics game that came out for the PS2 that didn't get released in the US. I think Guy was probably the only Final Fight character to make an appearance in that. It was a phenomenal game. If you can speak Japanese, I highly recommend playing it.
Yeah, it's just, that's the whole problem, is getting past the whole I can't speak Japanese thing.
I'm just saying, if you haven't played it, you're missing out. Hours and hours of tactics board game fun.
I mean, I could play it, but that means I gotta get the Japanese guy out of my closet and unchain him, you know, take off the leather straps. That's just a lot of fucking work.
Well, if he's wearing leather straps, I think he's in your closet for a reason.
Yeah. You know, I need him to translate, and I don't want him to run away. I mean, it's hard to catch a small Asian man. You'd be surprised, even when he's malnourished.
He's also his accountant.
That's very true. And my personal physician.
Okay, well.
And he does my math homework. He also does my math homework.
Why are you still doing math homework? You're almost 30.
I make it up. I don't know. Continuing education.
He goes to college. He wants to...
Did he homework in college?
He wants to be an overqualified clerk.
To answer your question, Toya, it depends on the teacher, on the professor.
Hmm.
But getting back to the topic of Street Fighter, I believe we were also informed today that Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition for the PC is going to have some unfortunate DRM.
It is going to have the DRM from hell. Here's what's going to happen. If you purchase Super Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition on Games for Windows Live, you'll get fantastic features such as the ability to play as only 16 of the 39 fighters if you're not connected to the internet. Also, you won't be able to save your progress in challenge mode or save any of your button settings unless you are constantly connected to this series of tubes that we call the interwebs.
DRM shows little signs of dying out.
Now, way to punish your paying customers, Capcom. You know what? I am going to not even say this in jest. I'm going to say this as a statement of fact. Within 2 weeks of that game being released, there will be an enterprising young programmer who will write a crack for the game that goes around the DRM. There is not even a question in my mind that this will happen. And to prove it, well, I was going to say I was going to download and play a copy of it, but you didn't hear it from me, so I'm not going to do that. But if I don't do that, I'll let you know how that goes.
I've said this before, and I'll say it again. DRM is a virus.
It really is. It's a virus in everything but name.
Exactly, and that's how they get away with it. You know?
And it's never, ever stopped a game from being pirated. I can't tell you a single game that I've ever seen DRM stop. And if DRM did stop a game from being pirated, it probably wasn't that good of a game in the first place, and probably nobody bothered to write a crack for it.
Yeah, honestly, it just shows a huge lack of respect for the fans and the players.
Here's the problem. The average consumer is a little stupid. And I don't mean that to offend anyone. I realize we're running away our own show guests and stuff, but, you know, I'm just saying. The average consumer is kind of stupid, and the average consumer doesn't know how to use a torrent or how to download or how to crack a file. Let's be honest. Your average consumer does not. Now, a guy who's grown up playing PC games and knows the ins and outs of them and knows an EXE file from a batch file from a conf file, yeah, he's going to download that game and pirate the game. You cannot stop those who are going to pirate from pirating, but you can confuse those who don't know what they're doing into doing the right thing. And I think that's exactly where DRM lies. It gives a false sense of security to people who don't understand how these things work.
But here's the thing, is, you know, a lot of games, I want to actually buy them and spend the money on them and have, you know, say that they're mine. I shouldn't have to be punished like that.
Well, it's the same thing in the movie industry. When you buy a DVD, you put it in, you watch a trailer for a movie you probably don't care about, you watch another trailer for another movie you probably don't care about, then you watch something about the studio, then you watch another trailer for the movie, and, you know, eventually you'll get to your main menu and then you'll watch your movie. I download the movie, I watch the movie. Why am I punished for doing the right thing?
Some movies actually have DRM on them now.
Oh, God, don't tell me that. No, don't tell me that.
Yeah, they make you install some kind of player that doesn't work, and they attach it on through that, I believe, is how it works.
As if it's not bad enough that most PCs come installed bloatware in the form of, like, 5 different programs that play DVDs. Although, I will say, there's stuff that's kind of going in the other direction. Like, I believe Facebook has started movie rentals now, and, I mean, there's stuff like Netflix that's recently just become the big dog on the block and really just sort of slaughtered all their competition in that regard. And I think that's actually the way to go. And I think Steam, as Steam picks up, is going to be that arm on the PC side, on the PC gaming side.
Exactly.
And the more and more I see games on the Xbox and PSN, the PS3 rely on Xbox Live and PSN, I think that eventually consoles are going to see the reduction of physical media, simply because from a perspective of delivering the content, you don't have to Look, I live out in the Caribbean. It's hard to get original Xbox 360 games out here. If it's something like Deadly Premonition, I still can't find a copy of that out here. How I couldn't find a copy of Alan Wake either. But when that
Why
became available,
would you want to find a copy?
What, Deadly Premonition? My God, that game is so bad it's great.
That game, I've seen it. That game looks like a video game.
It looks like a Dreamcast game that they threw in the trash.
It's not. No, it's not. It's not quite room bad. I'll go ahead and say though, it's the Space Mutiny.
Here's the thing about Deadly Premonition. It's deceptively horrible. The way I say that, it's like there are things that are a little off in the game that you think might just be a product of bad design, but then when you get further into it, you realize, holy shit, this is here for a reason. Like, for instance, there's a point where the main character is speaking to a woman across a table, and the table is, like, comically long, right? And you figure maybe just, like, the artist didn't realize what he was doing and he made the table too long. Then, like, halfway through the conversation, the character just kind of turns and as a side goes, why is this table so long? You know, just completely break it. The main character breaks the fourth wall all the time. He has an imaginary friend named Zach, and whenever he talks to Zach, he's actually talking to the player.
That's actually shining a light on things, or shining a lantern. Basically, you make a joke about it before the viewer can.
Right, but a lot of times it actually serves a gameplay function, because then you start looking for the things that are slightly off, and that's where your clues lay. It's actually quite brilliant in its insanity.
Is there a moment in the game where the graphics don't look terrible?
Actually, I don't want to spoil it, but there's sort of something like that. It's really, really quite good. So yeah, my point is, I think digital distribution, for on top of everything else, it costs the studios very little compared to actually having to press discs, put them out in stores, maybe some of them will sell, maybe some of them won't sell, they end up in bargain bins. Compare that to the fact of just hosting a file on a server and just letting people download it for money.
Well, here's the thing, though, I'll say this about physical media, in the defense of physical media. As a standpoint and a consumer part, I like being able to hold something in my hand. I emulate NES and Super NES games. I download them on Wii Virtual Console. I still buy NES and Super NES carts off of eBay. Why? Because there's just something so satisfying of holding that game cartridge in my hand and saying, this is mine. This belongs to me.
Let me just counterpoint that for a second, Joe, by saying that's from our generation. We grew up with that. But what about people like my niece, who's growing up listening to MP3s and has never owned a CD in her life? Does she have that kind of, she doesn't have that kind of thing to hold on to because she's never had it. She's grown up in the digital media age. And so when she gets to be our age and everything's downloadable, she's not going to care one way or the other if she has something physical to hang on to.
What about the MP3 player?
Well, I mean, that's going to change. Well, that's the thing. The MP3 player does not represent the actual media itself. It's the means of conveyance. Because she can listen to that same MP3 on her PC. She can listen to it on a cloud media service like Pandora. She can listen to it on Google Music. The media is what's important, not the medium. And I think this is something that we're now starting to realize that hadn't been important before. Because before, it was the medium that was important. Remember the whole Super Nintendo versus Sega Genesis days? That was about the medium, not the media. But now it's about the media as opposed to the media, because all the mediums are converging. TV, internet, video game consoles, and computers are all starting to occupy the same space in our homes.
But what I gotta say is that, like I said, and you're right, this may be just a product of my generation, should say something happen, I say I get a computer virus, you know, my internet goes out, and I don't have access to those files on a cloud server or on my hard drive. We were talking about in a couple episodes ago, I'll bring out, like, Final Fantasy VI. You know, it's my favorite game. I have it on emulation. I also have it on physical. I have two copies of it.
Mm-hmm.
Should something happen and I get a computer virus and my computer's out of touch and I want to play that game, I just simply move over to my Super NES, pop it in, you know, maybe blow on it, and that is a flaw, but to me, it's a flaw that's also kind of an endearing quality to it, you know? And
yeah.
But it also, once again, is most likely me being a product of the era I came from.
Yeah, it's nostalgia, really. But
I'll agree with you, for some reason, I just don't like have that same attachment to a CD as I do a game cartridge or a DVD or a VHS cassette. For some reason, a CD, like when MP3s came along, I was all for that. The only place I listen to CDs is in my car, and if I need a new CD for my car, I just burn one.
Right. And you know what's kind of getting me these days is about Blu-ray discs. The fact that we're not even really hitting half capacity on most of these discs, especially with older movies that were never rendered in that resolution to take advantage of it. Like, they just announced the new Star Wars, I don't know, Septology coming out on Blu-ray, and it's like, there are too many discs in that collection. You could theoretically fit all 6 films onto one Blu-ray disc with room for extras on there. And I don't think anyone would know the difference. Why are you pressing 6+ discs for a movie that could fit on one? You should make that a 2-disc set. You just have one have the movies with all the languages on it, and the other one have all the special features. You could fit easily, like, I don't know, 14 hours worth of special features on there.
They could, but they won't.
Then they can't sell the big, big, shiny box.
Agreed. I am totally agreeing with that. But what I'm saying is that the age of that being important is going away. I really hope and I really think that people are going towards a media-centric economy right now. And, you know, to be fair, I'm kind of all for it. I agree with what Joe's saying, though. I say, yeah, I think it's kind of not so great to not have things to hold on to. But, you know, it's kind of the byproduct of a consumer culture. We got to move on. We got to keep going. We got to move on to the next thing. That's how it is.
I say I like it. You know, it sounds incredibly silly, but I kind of like, if I like love a movie so much, like a DVD or a game, sometimes it's kind of fun. You can actually, if you have that cartridge, you can hug it. You can hug a game cartridge, which I fully admit I have hugged a game cartridge before because I loved it so much.
I believe it.
It's because I got, and I'll say, it was Double Dragon for the NES and Double Dragon 2. I bought them at the same time. I bought them off of eBay. I had them shipped to my house. They came, you know, I tore them out of their package. I stared at both of them, smiled, and I hugged them. This was 2 years
like,
ago.
Gave him candy and put him in the back of his van and
said I had a puppy. Offered him a Charleston chew.
A vanilla
Charleston. I'm just gonna quote the late great Douglas Adams, who said that what is the quote? Anything that's in the world when you're born is normal and ordinary and is just a natural part of the way the world works. Anything that's invented between when you're 15 and 35 is new and exciting and revolutionary, and you can probably get a career in it. Anything invented after you're 35 is against the natural order of things.
Right on.
So I'm thinking, you know, right now, yeah, new, exciting, revolutionary. If we were 35 and they had invented this whole cloud media thing, it would be against the natural order of things. That's all I'm saying.
I'm sure there are people who think that right now.
It's all cloud business. I don't like it. I'm against it.
Let's just think. Anything else going on in the world? Dave, you know?
Chaosium is working with a company called Red Wasp Design. They're going to make a Call of Cthulhu game for the iPhone. They're
Meh, don't care. Talk to me when it comes to Android.
It is also going to be released on an Android. Mm. On Android phones. According to the designer, they're drawing inspiration from games like XCOM.
Oh, XCOM. That was a game. Aaron, me and you know about some XCOM.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what was it? I remember the first time we played it, we ended up naming all of our bases after different kinds of soda.
Yeah. What?
Pepsi base, Coca-Cola base. Why did we even do that? We must have been incredibly thirsty.
And not only that, like, it was always just, like, we'd have, like, bases in the most, like, ridiculous places, like, in the middle of the ocean, or, like, Antarctica. Like, who the hell, you know what I mean? Like, it's, like, big top secret government base at the South Pole protecting the world from aliens. And then we were always like, why are we going to Buenos Aires and, like, South Africa? This sucks.
Those games were incredibly hard.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they were fun and frustrating, and it's funny you should mention the Arctic base. Often the aliens would set up a colony in the Arctic.
Yeah. But, you know, setting up the Arctic base, what are we, government soldiers or Bond villains?
Yeah, that's what I felt like.
You okay there, Aaron?
Yeah.
Okay.
So this really interested me, because the XCOM series actually did something like this. Their sequel, Terror from the Deep, actually had a lot of Cthulhoid elements to it.
Very nice.
It was basically the same game, but it was all underwater.
Yeah, I owned XCOM Terror of the Deep, but I never played it. I just don't know if I could never get it to run. You know, I owned it back in the day when, you know, you had to run things off of DOS and things were still a little tricky.
Well, they're all available on Steam now.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I've seen them. I've honestly thought about buying them.
You can get all five of them for $15. Like, $3 a game.
Deal bargain, especially if you wait around till, like, they have the sales and you can get, like, all of them for, like, $5. Hell yes.
Oh, yeah.
All right, hey, does anybody
remember?
They were
on sale when I went for them. They were $7.95.
I'm sorry, you're saying, Aaron?
No, I said, does anybody remember that game, Who Shot Johnny Rock?
Yes!
And, like, how, like, awesome it was for, like, the first, like, 20 minutes.
Point and click
mastery. Yeah. Oh, my God. Like, when you guys were talking about XCOM, like, I remember, like, you, like, here in the States, at least in Florida, you got, like, a whole, like, box full of games, and the one that came with XCOM Terror of the Deep also came with Who Shot Johnny Rock, and I remember, like, it was, like, the same thing over and over again, but it was just so, like, fucking awesome the first time you play it.
Yeah, what was it, who really does great point-and-click games now is Telltale Games. They've done the Sam & Max series, which some of our previous guests, you may remember them from last week, Aaron, and as well as our listeners, Tweezy and Shadow Man. They are both huge, huge Sam & Max fans. They've been telling me to check them out. They also did Back to the Future, one of the best point-and-click games I've ever seen. And that's besides the fact that it's Back to the Future.
Sam & Max, they had a TV show, and it's out on DVD. You might want to check that out.
Shameless plug!
I'm just saying, if you really want to check it out, they started off as a comic book. Then they became the video game. Then they became a short-lived TV series. Then I think they went back to comic books for a while. And now they're back on the video game scene.
Yeah. And Telltale Games also pretty soon will be coming out with their Jurassic Park game. That's going to be a bit interesting. Haven't had a Jurassic Park game in a while, especially a good Jurassic Park game.
Is there such a thing?
Yeah. You had the Genesis Jurassic Park game and the Super NES one. They weren't terrible.
I mean, they weren't good.
Speaking of video games about ancient predators, White Wolf is coming out with a MMO for their old Vampire the Masquerade line.
Huh. I don't know.
They're also celebrating the 20th anniversary of Vampire the Masquerade with a reprinting of the original rulebook. You can find it on their website for the low price of $100.
Or if you know you're like me and Aaron and you're cool, you already have a copy.
Oh, but right. This is the special new copy that features all of the same stuff, but with new full-color original art by Tim Bradstreet and some other people.
Ooh, Tim Bradstreet and some other people.
Well, I mean, he did do artwork for The Punisher, and that was pretty good. But talking about Vampire the Masquerade, that takes me back. Reminds me of, actually, the vampire game that the three of us were playing, Dave and Aaron.
Yeah.
The game that eventually just evolved into Vampire Theft Auto.
GTV, Grand Theft Vampire.
Vampire Theft Auto sounds better.
I remember that. I somehow became a fifth generation.
Yeah.
You remember that. Which is supposed to be impossible.
Oh, I remember I played probably the most batshit insane Malkavian ever.
No, you didn't. You basically just stole the Heath Ledger Joker. I remember that. Give credit where credit is due, Joe.
Hey, I had some pretty interesting stuff. Come on. Okay, it is Batman related, but remember how I wrote I'm Batman on in someone's blood on the wall? That was hilarious. Little smiley face.
That did happen.
Oh, that was hilarious.
That reminds me of another selling.
And Chaz, our ghoul.
Oh, Chaz.
I remember I would often have him team up with Aaron's ghoul, Bertha, this ugly redneck housewife. Yeah. And I just came up with this whole detective show idea. You remember I was like humming the theme song, Bertha and Chess.
Oh,
this whole 70s feel to it.
We just like
next week on Bertha and Chaz.
Chaz was the wisecracker.
We just like went into this family's house and just like slaughtered them and turned half of them into like ghouls and other vampires.
You know what's awesome is if anybody who has any idea what Vampire the Masquerade is now is probably going to want to pay the $100. In the game, because you can really tear it apart and have fun with that. It's a great game.
We just started taking over territories. It really became Vampire Theft Auto. We are not kidding about this one.
But about that, in the 20th anniversary edition, one of the selling points is they actually feature rules from going to Neonate to Methuselah. So, in a way, we didn't break the game, I guess.
No, we still totally broke the game.
We broke it.
Yeah.
You know, that reminds me, though. And do we, have any other, general amusing role-playing stories from the past? Toya, do you got any? I know you're doing a D&D podcast with your buddies from Voltoid.
Yeah, that started getting pretty good in our last session. We had, my favorite moment of the whole thing was, we're playing a four-man group. I'm playing as a warlord, class fighter, and, one of our other players is playing a dragonborn, Tempest. And if you're not familiar with D&D, you don't know what a Dragonborn is. They're basically these big dragon-looking humanoid people. And I decide at one point that we have to breach a door, and I figure, hey, why not let the big dragon guy go upstairs? So he's like, okay, whatever. He goes up to the door, tries it. It's locked. There's some magical glyphs written on it, and there's some kind of scorch mark on the wall opposite it, which, you know, is never a good thing. So he goes up to the door, tries the knob, and all of a sudden, we just see the DM just kind of put this red line across the map, and it's like, yeah, a bolt of fire scorches from the door and pierces the heart of the Dragonborn. It's like, well, glad I didn't open that door.
Wait, pierces,
you know,
the heart?
Random traps. Just, there you go. Well, I mean, the scorch mark had to come from somewhere, right?
There's this one time that I was playing with a good buddy of mine, Dan. He was our DM. We were playing with a group of people, and we were fighting a phase spider in some caves. And for those of you who don't know what a phase spider is, it's basically a monster. It's a giant spider that has the ability to phase in and out of the material plane to the ethereal plane, which is just different planes of existence, basically. And it's, you know, generally not your run-of-the-mill monster, you know, definitely tougher than your average orc. A lot tougher, actually. Although the funny part is we had, it was a mage of all characters kill the phase spider. It wasn't in one hit, because some of us did do some damage to it beforehand, but there'd maybe been two hits tops for probably just a little bit of damage. I can't remember off the top of my head. But instead of the mage casting a spell, he's like, I'm going to attack it with my quarterstaff. And we're all thinking, are you crazy? Why would you... What is going on? I don't even... Kills the phase spider with a critical hit. I believe the graphic detail was, you go up through its mouth and pierce its brain, and the phase spider proceeds to die with a giant look of, what the fuck just happened, on its face.
With a quarterstaff?
With a quarterstaff. Essentially just a wooden staff, a mage's, a wizard's staff, like Gandalf from Lord of the Rings.
Did it even have a point to it at all?
No! It was the
I might have missed this part. What was the roll on that? What was like the number stats on that?
It was just like ultra... It was really critical. The face spider, I mean, it had about less than half, just a little bit less than half HP left. And the rules might have been fudged a little bit, because my memory's a little bit hazy here, for various reasons. But that's essentially, to the best of my knowledge, what happened. And the general joke was, for a while, in it, any time a miraculous kill was, someone would shout out, and the phase spider dies with a look of, what the fuck, on its face.
I think we all have stories like that.
I normally just get very low rolls, because, like, for some reason my character I'm playing right now in D&D has a perception of -1. And so, like, I'll roll for, like, okay, I roll to see where this door leads, and I roll, like, you know, a 1, and that's a -1, so my perception is 0, so I look around and I go, what's a door?
Dude, don't worry about it. Back during the days of 2nd edition, I rolled a wizard with strength of 6. So he was basically a cripple.
He couldn't lift his own bag then.
Oh, you know what? That's the thing. That was another thing. For some reason, this person decided to give the wizard... never mind. Continue.
But if you want low rolls, I was once playing a game with a guy I know named Casey. He rolled a druid. He never once did any damage with his weapons or his spells. The only thing that ever hit was this companion he had, this owl. But that did damage at 1d4 minus 3. So it might do 1 point of damage if you were lucky. And it was the only thing that was doing any hits. So our GM came up with this obviously on-the-fly scenario where his owl that he named Peyton gets transported to this magical owl planet where he fights in the owl wars and he returns without the minus 3 so he could actually do some damage.
Oh, Lord.
Because that was the owl that actually caught Simon Cowell.
Yes.
You just made a Weeble reference on my goddamn podcast.
Maybe.
But it doesn't stop there. There was this fight that the DM set up to try and let the druid be useful for once. There was this giant salamander that a druid could easily walk through, essentially. He refused to attack it, and he refused to let anyone else attack it. He called it this holy creature that he worshipped, or something like that. He would actually stop you, and refuse to let you even touch it. Yeah, just absorb that for a minute. He purposefully just derailed the whole thing.
Well, we've all had players like that, I think.
Some more than others. I remember once in another game, my brother rolled this half-orc barbarian. He put everything into rope skills. Everyone laughed at him for it, but he said, yeah, you're laughing now, but one day you're going to need the half-orc that knows rope skills. There was this one bit where they had to get across this chasm or go into this labyrinthian catacombs or something. And he set up this rope that would take them across the chasm. He said, all right, I'll test it. I'll go first. So he made it across. Then as one of them was trying to get across, he just cuts the line and just has his character dance on the other side to mock them.
Revenga!
What about you, Aaron? Any stories to regale us?
I mean, the only kind of story that I have is I got one time I like got an incredibly low roll. I think I was just trying to open a door, kind of like Toya situation. Only like I rolled so low that like I like died in the process of trying to open the door because I was so weak. Yeah, I don't remember how it worked. I think I, like, fell and just shattered my skull on the doorknob.
I remember this other time. It was, it was a long, long time ago. Pre-Phase Spider incident. Oh, and speaking of the Phase Spider, that's what I was actually going to say earlier when I kind of had the little brain fart there. I think for some reason the player gave his wizard a unusually high strength score. So just figure like this really buff wizard, like if the ultimate warrior was a mage or something.
That's horrifying.
Magic missile. Hulk. Hulk.
Well, good thing since he already speaks in, you know, indecipherable bullshit. You will not skronk on my podcast. This is a
skronking
free zone. If we ever get Spoony on here, he will be informed of that. But, anyways, this other story, we were on a bridge, and this actually was GURPS, not D&D, so, you know, that's showing how old school this story is. I was playing as a ninja, and what it was we were fighting a group of orcs on a bridge, and I make an awesome roll. It was, you know, critical max damage. So basically the way the DM described it, I stuck the bow staff on the ground in between the orc's legs, and as hard as I could, I swung up, hit him in the crotch. And I hit him so hard that the momentum carried him over, tossing him over the bridge, landing on the rocks below, splitting his skull open, killing him instantly. I actually got a standing ovation by the group.
I don't know about you, but I think hitting someone in the crotch should automatically register as a double critical.
I think what your DM should have done was just hold up a piece of blue construction paper and have it read, system has crashed. You know? Saying, you got him so hard, the game crashed.
No, you just, the DM just holds up a yellow card and says, one more of those and you'll be sent off the field.
Yes.
I'm looking at you, Rolandinho. You see Rolandinho and sitting there with the dice. What? Stop bringing in out of game knowledge, Rolandinho. God, now I just have
You might be
soccer.
Thinking of Zinedine Zidane, actually.
I just now have this image of pro soccer players playing D&D, and it's actually really amusing.
I think that's our episode title. Pro soccer players playing D&D.
Yeah, Vin Diesel, he evidently loves D&D.
Barclays English Premier D&D League. Competitive D&D. And you thought BattleBots was nerdy.
Sword Coast United.
Somewhere Grant Imahara is just orgasming at the thought of professional D&D.
Does he play D&D?
I wouldn't be surprised.
I think maybe he might actually play more Mech Warrior than D&D.
He probably at least used to as a kid.
You guys want another story? One time I was playing 4th edition. I figured I might as well at least give it a try. We came to this puzzle. I forget the exact words, but it was pretty obvious that we just needed, like, some leather, plant, and a rock. You know, it was like, of earth, of
so plant. So it was a Thursday night, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah. It was a pretty simple puzzle. It took them 2 hours.
Oh,
2 hours to figure it out.
Oh, Jesus.
And they wouldn't let me say anything or do anything. When I thought I had it figured out, and I was right. But moving on, that led to a dungeon where my brother was playing a dragonborn warrior, I believe. And he wanted to tail whip these gnomes. And he rolled a 1. The DM described it as he swings around and knocks everyone behind him unconscious. And then he falls over, dizzy. That was what happened. So we were essentially kidnapped by gnomes.
Were they underpants gnomes?
I think they were.
Was one of the gnomes named David?
What?
Do you have a fox named Swift?
So then we had to go back to the town and fight a dragon, or at least we thought it was a dragon. It turned out it was a gnome illusionist, and we had a chance to interrogate him before he passed out.
When you interrogated him, did you find out what stage 2 was?
No, actually. Before we got the chance to ask him about stage 2, my brother says, I'm going to knee him in the dick. And that's what he did. He knocked him unconscious.
There's an awful lot of crotch hitting for D&D in this entire scenario.
Yeah, Joe's story kind of reminded me of that.
Crotch hitting in D&D is kind of like a pastime. I mean, crotch hitting is kind of a pastime.
I think it's crotch hitting and fake sex on graph paper. There's always some guy who tries to, I don't know, seduce the dark sorceress. There was one incident where some guy in a game at my local comic store tried to seduce a Medusa.
Huh. How do you do that exactly? Look into my eye.
Evidently, you just blindfold yourself.
I just want to interrupt here in a second. I just want to give a great shout-out to the website The Oatmeal real quick, because I was just looking at theirs, one of their latest comics, and it's How 127 Hours Should Have Ended. You know, it's just showing stills from the movie. Stills, you know, falls in there. He's going kind of crazy. He's blogging and everything. You know, he's like doing the thing where he cuts his limb off. And then it just shows, he's got a little word bubble that says, and that's why. And you have a bunch of little kids. It's a shot from Arrested Development. It's the Bluth family as kids. And then next thing, bloody face, James Franco just says, you always leave a note.
That's great.
I just love that. Any reference to Arrested Development is automatically amazing.
And that was an intelligent one.
God damn you, Fox, for cutting that show. That's all I have to say.
I think G4 almost brought it back.
Yeah, same thing with IFC, but it's not, you know, we're just going to get the movie and that's going to be it if that ever even happens. But I think that's all that's going to do for us here this week on the Electric Information Show. I'd like to thank our guests, Dave and Aaron.
Oh, you're welcome.
Hey, AKA You Are Reading and Aaron of the Lost World. And I'll have to say to you, Aaron, it's nice shooting, Pumpkin. Daddy loves you.
Jimmy Carter is Rat Patrol.
And, I'm Joe Convoy. For Toya.
Yo!
This is Joe Convoy saying, I don't have a sign-off line.
This is when